So tell me, what was Flintstein doing when you first met him?
Well, he's doing the same thing, just translating, and you know, interpreting and in the court and translating and he was looking after a lot of the old folks, mm-hmm. and he did a lot of their papers for them. All kinds of papers, you know, income tax as well as their legal papers. And he did have a form of a lawyer background. It was, through the post. Mm-hmm. What do you call it?
Sort of by correspondence?
Yeah, correspondence, yeah. Something like that.
That's what he was trained in.
Well, yes.
He had a university degree, didn't he?
Yes, he had his BA, but you see, that doesn't give him much.
What was it in? Do you recall?
No, I don't think it was anything special, was it?
I was reading the Chinese translation on an article on him, and it said something like French.
No.
It was French or law.
Law. It was law. But it wouldn't be French. But he actually never practiced it because, you see, they weren't allowing... They didn't admit the Chinese to the bar then.
Right.
And so, of course, they didn't. He didn't get in. And then, of course, after a time, you lose your knowledge, whatever you've learned, you've forgotten. And if you don't continue on to add more and more and more to your knowledge, well, you won't have it, will you? Mm-hmm.
When I stopped you earlier, you were telling me about mixed marriages. I
guess oh, yeah.
Flynn were certainly ahead of the times.
Yeah, and it was very bad. It was very, very bad. Getting in the buses and going into hotel, you know, banquets or anything like that, people just, they stared at you and they started to talk as you were passing. And it wasn't good. But then... Who cares at that time? But after a while, it gets to you. What else? What else can we tell you?
What was the reaction from the Chinese community?
Oh, that was bad.
Was that bad too?
Oh, that was really a corker. I don't know. He got an awful lot of gaff from that. But we just came out of China and all. We didn't live nowhere near there, you see. We lived over here in 2100 Block York Street for many years. And then we moved over to Walnut Street. And this is where we were.
What were you doing in the hospital? Were you a nurse?
No, I was ill.
You were ill.
I had an ear infection.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was doing. No, I was the nurse. And I met her there. And we talked, and I met him there. And we talked.
Are you a Vancouver girl?
No, I was born in New Brunswick.
Moncton,
New Brunswick, yeah. They're having a bad time down there right now with the weather.
What brought your family up to the West Coast?
Well, my mother couldn't take the weather anymore. And my father passed away. So she brought us all over here. There were six of us. But.
And then you settled here in Vancouver.
Yeah. And I don't know about him, but I can tell you about him.
Well, when you first met him, what did you think of him?
Well, I thought he was a pretty good chap.
Mm-hmm.
And he had Vivian, you see, one little girl.
One little girl.
And then, I mothered her and looked after the house and that. But then, but he did most of his work free. And
so where did the money come from? Did you run a household?
Well, he did get some, but it wasn't very much. I went to work at the wire rope factory during the war, starting in the war. But. It was tough going all the time. Not only was it tough for the money part, but it was tough for the, you know, considering everybody was against us. And but you see, you can go, you can get, you know, you can go on living and managing anyway. But he did a lot of his work, most of his work, free. He said that God put him in this world to help his people, and this is what he was going to do. And some of them were very good. He never sent out any bills, but he did a lot for He did a lot for a lot of people. I don't think you could meet anybody that didn't figure that he could do something for them.
He was a very generous man.
Yeah.
What made him so generous?
I don't know.
Did he ever talk about his family, about his folks, or his, you know, his childhood or anything like that? Did that ever, you know, connect to the kind of man that he was that you knew?
No, but he had his mother and his dad were over in Cumberland. And he had a brother and a sister. The sister's still here in Vancouver. And did you know that? Let me see, she is, doesn't speak very good English.
She's a Jang. Yvonne Jang?
Yeah. Oh, then you know.
But I don't know how to... I mean, I've only seen her name in newspaper clippings, sort of, and, you know, the family is Joan and the children and one sister. So I know that much.
Oh, well, then... She doesn't come out. I go out there once in a while, but seldom.
To see her?
Yeah.
Where is she living?
I've got it written down.
Oh, okay. So Funcine's parents lived in Cumberland, but he was over here.
Yeah.
Was he a good son? Did he play the role of a good son?
Oh, yes, but then, yes, he was a good son. But then, see, they didn't stay here very long. Like, he was in university, so he had to be over here to live. And then they went back to China. And they took the son with them, the younger son. And he died soon after they got there, and the father passed away soon after they got there. I think the weather change was too much for them. They were in Canton, near Canton City. It was too much for them. And the mother did live quite a while afterwards. There was an older sister that went to India and did come back there when the father had gone and the mother was there alone. She came back there with some of her children. But it's funny how they all get separated. But she was quite a bit older.
The sister.
Yeah. I don't know.
What about raising a family here? You had, he had Vivian, and then you had some more children.
Yes, well.
Did the two of you share child raising duties, or did it
fall mostly onto you? No, he didn't do a great deal with the children. Just to see that their education was going ahead good, and that they studied. No, he didn't do a great deal about the house. He was out mostly all the time down Chinatown.
One of the newspaper articles I was reading said that you worked the night shift.
Yeah.
So that you would have more time at home when the kids were at home and things like that.
Yeah, well, I worked in the wire rope factory. We had all kinds of shifts. You know, we had day shifts and swing shifts and graveyard shifts. But he was home with them at night, late at night. That was the best shift for me because I knew he was there, you know. And it was on Granville Island, the wire rope factory.
And then the kids went on to university. They did very well.
Yeah, they did very well. They have to, they're old now. My son, the son just had had an aneurysm fixed in operation this morning. Mm-hmm. And you see, he's 50 years old. So
when they were growing up, they had a hard time as children of mixed background.
Yeah, they couldn't get work because of the mixed. You know how kids like to do some bits of work.
Children can be very cruel.
Yeah, but even adults when they're applying for work, they didn't, they wouldn't accept them because they were partly Chinese. I don't know why, but nowadays, you see, they don't. Nowadays, and no matter what nationality they are, they're just as good as the other. See, things change in 20 years, 25 years. However, it's all over now. And
what did Funsim do for relaxation when he came home from all of these?
Read. Was reading. Reading or writing.
He was an avid reader.
Yeah. Not only that, but he was did a lot of writing. He had a lot of speeches to write and a lot of things to look up. And he was a liberal, in the Liberal Party. But it didn't get him anywhere, didn't get him anything, didn't. But he was always strong, staunch liberal.
And Chinatown is still regarded as a liberal kind of. You know,
I know they. Yeah, I know they got a big group together for the when Turner was here. But it's nothing what it used to be. Nothing at all. But then you see they don't have a leader that. That they can put their trust in. I don't mean the Liberal Party, I mean Chinatown. So, but I don't know what else to tell you.
Well, Funsim organized something called the Chinese Trade Union
Association,
which was for restaurant workers. Why did he do that? Why was he particularly concerned about restaurant workers?
It wasn't only restaurant workers, I don't think. I think it was just anybody that just a band together to keep them together, to have some place to. And then, of course, with his legal background or his legal mind, he could tell them different things. And he had a lot of connections with people that he could get information from, you know. I don't think it didn't net him any money or anything. I think it just, I don't think anybody paid anything. I think it was just to keep them together so that they wouldn't feel left out.
The workers.
Yeah. All workers.
He was particularly concerned about workers.
Yeah. Well, the underdog, you know, the. But then there was a lot of wealthy Chinese here as well. But there was more and more toward the end, toward getting on now, of course, there's a lot. But at that time, there used to be an awful lot of you know, lower paid people.
Mm-hmm. And Fun would help everybody.
Yeah, it didn't matter who it was, he'd help them. And of course, he got into a lot of trouble about it, but.
What kind of trouble did he get into?
Oh, they had fights.
Really? Who was fighting who?
Oh, the Freemasons were fighting the Chinese Benevolent Association. And the Wong Association and the Lee's Association, they were all fighting each other on and off. But it would soon quiet down.
I guess one of the major fights must have been with Doug Jung, who was Chinese running for the Conservatives, and Chinatown being
liberal.
Liberal.
But of course, Doug Jung, he had a lot of followers too. Of course. Oh yeah, they had a lot of fun. A lot of arguing, a lot of fighting. And I don't remember a lot of their names.
You met a lot of those people. I've seen your picture in many of banquet photographs.
Yeah, I've met a lot of them, but I don't remember their names. Nor who belongs to who. The first thing they do is ask you, who's your father?
That's right.
Not me, but other people. These are some good old pictures, eh? I'll just have a better look at that. Of course, you can't read the Chinese.
It's part in English.
Yeah.
When you went to those banquets, Fun would be always making speeches.
Oh, yeah.
What were some of his best lines? Or
I couldn't tell you.
Was he a good speaker?
Oh, yeah.
Why was he a good speaker? What did he do that made him such a good speaker?
Well, I think he had the command of English better than a lot of other people. And of course, having the Chinese too. A lot of his work was, in Chinese. A lot of his speeches. It was very, very boring to sit there and listen to somebody talking in Chinese for half an hour, and I didn't know a word of it. I just sat there and waited. And to make it worse is they had always had the speeches before the food.
Always.
They still do?
Yes. But the speeches are shorter these days.
They better be. Or they won't have anybody waiting to see and get the food. I wouldn't be able to keep up with it now. I'm not so good.
It must have been sort of every weekend the banquet for the two of you.
During the week also.
During the week also.
Lots of them I couldn't go to because I was working, either working or sleeping, trying to catch up on the house. What else can I tell you?
I guess between the period when you first met Fun Xian and to the time that he died, what kinds of changes did you see happening in the Chinatown that he was working with?
Well, it grew. It grew tremendously. And there was a lot of... Of course, he helped with some of the immigration, you know, some of the people coming in. But he wouldn't do anything that was... You know, if he thought it was a bit tainted, he wouldn't touch it. He wouldn't... And he had a lot of connections there, too. And... But if he thought that anybody was trying to pull a fast one, he wouldn't have anything to do with it. And you don't blame him, because this was his adopted country, and he couldn't afford to... You know, get the... I don't know the words to use on his back, you know, because he did what he could to help them, and that was it. Sometimes they paid him, sometimes they didn't. Mostly they didn't.
Mostly they didn't. He just got a lot of goodwill from it.
Yeah, well, he enjoyed doing it, and that was a big thing.
But a man has to eat somehow, and a man with a family has responsibilities.
And not only that, the kids had to go to university. And when our daughter started out at university out here, I had been working at the wire rope factory for a wee while. And it was only $69 for the first half year. And from then on, of course, it raised. Yes. She took two grades, grade 11 and 12, in 1 year at the Kitsilano High School, so as to get into UBC because they didn't have enough students out there. And they wanted to, anyway. It was only, that was $69. And now look what it is.
It's over $1,000, I think, per year.
Well, that was just for 6 months. And that's all we actually had to have. And managed to get it together. But it wasn't easy. None of it was easy. Anyway.
I guess it's a contrast because everybody thinks, I mean, Fun Xian was a very successful community leader. I mean, everybody called him the mayor of Chinatown.
Yeah.
And yet to think that money was a problem, that there was always struggle, that's a real kind of contrast because one normally associates, you know, leaders with, as people who have a lot of money.
Well, he didn't. Because, you see, it wasn't easy. He was a translator interpreter at the courthouse. And after a while, there was enough of them that spoke English and could translate it, so they didn't need him. So, of course, he just had to go in his own way of looking after immigration and other people's papers and money. But then he was happy in what he was doing, and this was a whole lot of the struggle.
Do you think people took advantage of him?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, they did. I knew they did, but you can't do nothing about it.
How did Fun feel about that?
Oh, well, he just kept on going. And if they want, as I said, God put him in this world to help his people. And if they wanted to pay him, they did. And if they didn't, they was all right. He just did it anyway. That was his motto, and this is what he stuck to. And so, anyway.
That's amazing.
Yeah. He wouldn't see a doctor. And when he became ill, he wouldn't see a doctor. And so he had an aneurysm that burst, and that was it.
But was he in usually good health? He
was very active. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, he was very... he always seemed to be, until the last, when he just... He had this terrible back pain. He'd been down in Chinatown all day. So
it occurred quite suddenly.
Yeah. It just burst, you know, an aneurysm. It's like a lump in the top, an old... like a bubble on an old tire, and it burst, and that was it. All the same as attack, heart attack, cerebral palsy, something like that.
What do you think made Funsen such a successful leader? I mean, he was a leader. What do you think made him so successful?
Well, I don't know. I think he just made up his mind to be. That's all I could think of. He was well liked by many, many people, and I don't think that I don't think he had any when he was going to university. He had to work his way through university. He worked in vegetable stores and fruit and vegetable stores, and that I don't know. Of course, it didn't cost so much in those days. And,
so he had a working class background.
Yes. Well, his father was a grocery store operator over in Cumberland, and it was a mining town. When his father went back to China, there was thousands of dollars owing to him because he had the same as Fun. He didn't collect any. All the money he should have done. You know, he'd give out a lot of credit. He never did get it back. But his father didn't help him to go to university. He just came over here and went to work. And, but anyway.
Do you think Fun never did anything he regretted? Would have done differently if he had a second chance around?
Well, he would have got a degree. You know, he would have got a law degree. He would have got something that gave him a living. Of course, he thought he was going to get a living, I guess, when he was doing. But as you know, in those days, as well as these days, there's no work for a BA. But... I don't know whether he did. He never said he regretted anything. Mm-hmm. Not that I know of. These are all your questions, eh?
Oh, yeah. It helps me.
Yeah, when you talk, you remember.
Well, for this book, since I'm going to be having a piece and a focus on Funsen, what do you think is the most important thing that my readers ought to know about Funsen, in your opinion?
Oh, dear. Well, the younger ones will never know him. Because I doubt very much if the younger ones care. But the older ones will read it, and they will know. They'll know what you put down as the truth, not because they knew the man. And I don't know how long you're going to take this, but there's an awful lot of them are dying off, and they won't be able to read it. But you'll get it down, and you might let me read it.
Well, I'm sure I will. I'm actually going to work it out and show it to you before I take
it. Are you going to get it in a small pamphlet, or are you going to have it in a big book? Is it a whole?
It's a book, but I can show you the different sections before it gets published so that you can see what I'm saying.
I think you're going to have to make up your own mind what you're going to put down.
Well, I'm curious because, I mean, I'm of the generation that sort of came right after Fusini's generation. And we have some sense of him doing a lot for the community. And I think he's interesting because he is so different from the rest of the community that was very, in a way, very passive and very reticent to speak up. But yet Fusini was there saying, we have to fight for these things. We have to get these kinds of things. And so it's sort of what this one man with all these visions made a difference. And so what is it that makes these kind of men come out in our community?
I don't know what makes it. But you know, he went back to Ottawa to fight the immigration year after year after year, many years. I don't know how many years it was. Was it 18 years?
Yeah, something like that.
Did you find any of those books?
There are newspaper clippings talking about his annual pilgrimage to Ottawa.
Mm. I just wonder what happened to those. You know, there was each year we saved them. Each year he went, we saved one, or he saved one. He saved more than one, but when he passed away, we did away with a lot of things because for lack of space. But we saved one from each year. He missed one year before he was gone. He had a call out for someone to if they had it, to give it, but he never got it replaced.
What kind of a dream did Fusini have for his people? What did he want? What did he want for his community?
Well, I think he wanted what more or less what's coming on now, everybody to be the same. No favoritism. But then you see, when you get a bunch of riffraff in from China or any other place in Asia, well, you can't expect them to respect our, because the way they've lived previously, they won't respect our laws or anything here. No wonder there's so much trouble. But I think he wanted to be everybody to be alike. But of course, it was hard.
In those days, they were getting different kinds of laws in place.
And I think some of the laws are still in place, but people just ignore them right now. But so we have terrible things going on. I don't know, he would turn over his grave if he knew about it, a lot of things that was going on. But maybe he has turned over, I don't know.
But he did live to see a lot of things change.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, a lot of the things he made happen. And he had a lot of friends, a lot of people he knew in Ottawa. I don't think he ever did much for them, but he did have a respect for them, and I guess they respected him. So when he tried to have somebody reunited with their family, I guess they helped him to do so. I don't know.
Were there any special cases that Fun talked about these immigration cases that were so pathetic and you know, in a way, heartrending? Were there any?
He wouldn't tell me anything about it, or very little. Every once in a while I got something, but I don't remember what it was, but he wasn't, he didn't tell me any people or people's names. He knew some of them were trying to get into Canada illegally, but he wouldn't have nothing to do with it. I mean, he was as honest as the day is long. He wouldn't have nothing to do with anything that was shady, you know. Of course, if he had done, he'd have had lots of money.
And yeah, things would have turned out so differently.
Yeah. But I have to respect him for it. Got any more notes that we can go on.
No, no, no.